Hi, everybody. It's Monday morning. I'm here with Leanne Moll. We got a guest popping in the next little while. I think it's going to be lots of fun, and it's a good way to start your week. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
We had our shrink appointment. No.
Feeling good.
Yeah, now we can move
on. Moving forward.
All right, so this is quite an interesting thing. I can't believe, because maybe you do know this happened. So someone was driving. I think they were in a taxi. And they saw this guy wanking.
Oh, in the, no.
Have you seen this?
No.
Oh, okay. Have I got a start to your day for
no.
you? All right. So so the funny thing is that they've got the registration and everything.
Is this local?
Yeah.
No, Mansus.
In Ladysmith or something. All right. So play the video of the guy because this has got to be. First of all, why, dude? Why? Why during the day? Why with the windows open in your car?
So is there no one in the car with him?
No.
I imagined it to be like a taxi full of people.
No. Take a look.
Ew.
Here it is. You know that internet meme where the guy goes, "Oh no,
oh no, oh no, oh no."
Right, so it's like that.
That's the funny. I mean, if that laugh is really coming from the people filming,
it is.
It's not canned.
No, that's real.
Then that's what makes that the most funny.
I just, that has got to be the dumbest decision that guy's made. Because now apparently the registration
goes
all over the place and people are talking about it. It's just really shitty. And there's this video, which also went viral over the weekend. Apparently it's nonsense, but I don't know. So I'm just going to put it out there and ask you, and maybe there are people who are working in the education department who know something more than this. It's not just what you told us earlier about Banyaza Lesufi trying to get us to learn Mandarin and Swahili at school. But apparently, there are discussions around a grade 13. So imagine you go into matric this year.
It's like another year.
And you think,
yeah, added onto your sentence.
Finished with school at the end of this year. And then they say to you, oh, by the way, the Department of Education has decided that there's going to be a grade 13. So this came up on a lot of people's feeds over the weekend. I'm not sure whether it's true or not, but I thought it's worth a discussion. So here, take a look at this guy.
Africa is getting a grade 13. High school no longer ends in grade 12. It now finishes in grade 13. From 1st Jan 2026, basic education will add another grade after grade 12. There will be grade 13.
Okay, so first of all,
I haven't seen anything else.
So, let's just suspend disbelief. Let's imagine it's true.
Mm.
How's that going to make it better?
Yeah, you see, because immediately I thought there are some people who might need that extra year.
Retarded people.
But the thing is, if if high school has not worked for them so far.
Yeah, why would an extra year, why would you put them through another year of hell?
13's not going to do the trick.
Very bad idea. Whoever came up with this, if it is a thing that they're even considering. Let's say they discussed it at some meeting and that leaked. That's where the basis and genesis of the story is.
I mean, how would it help?
It would not help.
It would.
Then we'd be dumb for another year. Like, you're adding an extra year of dumb. You're not going to make it. Guys, I need to go and speak to the Minister of Education. I just need to sit there for 5 minutes. They can chase me out of the building after that and never talk to me again. Human beings are like a computer. You know? The computer. It may be a slightly fucked up computer, or it may be a very, very fast, brilliant computer. There are different people, but sometimes the motherboard of the computer is actually burnt out. Okay. Like there's smoke coming from it. None of the connections work anymore. Now, if the motherboard of your computer is screwed, there is no amount of education you can put into the machine.
Software ain't going to help.
Yeah. And education is just software. You don't take a dumb person and make them clever with education. There was one guy who was at school with me. He was just dumb. There was nothing. The teachers tried with him. They'd put him at the front of the class. They'd put him at the back of the class.
In the corner they'd of give the
him
class.
They'd give him the book with the pictures.
Outside the class.
It didn't help, okay? He was just a fucking gonk. He was an idiot. There was nothing you could do for him. And I don't know what he's doing today. If he's still alive, he's not in jail. But there was nothing you could teach him. The information didn't go in and stay. It was sometimes trickled in and then it went out almost immediately.
Mm.
And he'd sit and laugh at farts and pick his nose. And
I take offense to that.
Okay, I laugh at farts, but he would fart and then laugh. Okay, let me put it that way. And he was not going to be better. There's no amount of
he may have found his niche. You never know.
Look, I'm not saying that he's completely useless to society, but there's only a certain amount of stuff that that guy could ever do. Mm. And listen, I mean, some very, very smart people are, you know, super specialized and not good at other things, and that's cool, but they have a role to play. And so does this dumb friend of mine, right? This wasn't ever a friend, dumb guy at school with me. What the government needs to realize, and they just don't get this, is that education is a system whereby you are uploading software programs to people. It's like teaching people a language. It's a software program. But if the hardware is destroyed and the hardware doesn't compute properly, you're wasting your time putting software in because your software is just going to get stuck and it's not going to go where it needs to go. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, so an extra year of high school is not going to help anyone. All it's going to do is cost us more as a country.
And our employment figures will look better because you technically can't be employed for that
extra year.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's one thing I was thinking of.
That's
what they're trying to do. It's like when they keep dropping the standard of maths, for example, then it looks like we're getting cleverer because
everyone's getting 100%.
Yeah, because suddenly you can't add. Well, it's 5 and 5. It must be 9. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you pass. And then our pass rate goes up. But actually, we're allowing dumb people to get away with being dumb.
Yeah.
Guys.
All in the optics.
Even if this is not true, and I think it's probably like 80% bullshit. But it's a story, and it made people think. And I just can't imagine how terrible it must be for someone who's just started grade 12 and they're
oh
my God, they're going to add another year at the end of this year.
No, you can't do that to a person that's soul destroying.
Imagine.
I still have nightmares that I've gone back to school because I've only just found out that I actually didn't pass the last year. I mean, I'm nearly 50 years old and I still have nightmares
about exams,
about an extra year of school, and because I can't fit into the dress when I put it on, right? It's the worst.
Oh, speaking of not being able to fit in the dress, here's a picture of the Beatles, but it's the fat Beatles, and they're called the Dire Beatles, right?
The one in the far back left looks like a woman. Well, Paul McCartney looks like an old gran now, doesn't he?
He does look like a gran.
Yeah.
Find a picture, Flex. No, see if you can find a picture of Paul McCartney 2025. He looks like a gran.
You're losing testosterone. Mm. Testosterone, the square jawline. And it's one of the reasons why men actually become more tearful and
because they have less testosterone.
Yes.
So in other words, in some ways, they become more relatable.
Become more like women, but they're not allowed to go to the women's bathrooms in the old age home.
And they can't fight with women in the boxing ring. We'd prefer if they didn't do that. All right, so there we go. I've really made your morning, I hope. I've given you a reason to fear going back to school, and I've shown you a guy who was jerking off in the car.
Did he, because it was the screen was quite far away, I just needed to ask quickly, did he stop when the truck hooted?
I don't know. It's all kind of fuzzy.
I don't want to watch it again, though.
So no, I don't want to. It's too embarrassing, right? You know, sometimes you see something happen to someone else and you're embarrassed?
Oh, yeah.
That would be the thing. But during the day, on the highway.
But it's so weird how being, if you're a politician or whatever, being bussed or maybe a news anchor, being bussed cheating on your wife.
It used to be a thing. I don't think it's even a thing.
You know, being bussed for embezzling funds. Those things are kind of, people are like, people will be angry with you for it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to wanking, it's hard to actually be like angry with them. It's yeah. not like you actually just feel complete shame. So
the responses on the internet were, they ranged from "what a guy," which is not the right response, to "oh my God, that's the most embarrassing thing ever," and everything in between.
Yeah.
So anyway, by the way, don't try to solve other people's problems. There's this great article that I read in some American newspaper over the weekend about how people come to the most stupid conclusions about helping other people. Like, there's this brilliant cartoon of a woman standing at a grave, and she goes, "Have you thought about a vision board?" There. Oh. Look, maybe you should make a vision board. So, you know, people try to help sometimes, and that doesn't help. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm. Sometimes you don't need to get involved in all of these things. And
it's also too little too late.
Yeah, and then there's one other thing that only you would like, you and I, because
yeah.
you know, we're a certain age. So here's a picture of Phil Collins and something that he made up back in the 80s. And we still don't know what it is, okay? Where's that Phil Collins picture? Yeah. It's been 40 years, and I still don't know what Susudio means.
Susudio, that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a song that he sang, right? We still don't know what it is. But I do know this, that even though we don't know what Susudio is and what it means, it's very important that we protect it because it's from the 80s.
Yeah.
And it needs to
be preserved.
It must be preserved. We've got to look after Susudio. Okay, but it's a very 80s word, right?
Yeah.
You can almost, I mean, just show that picture again. Look at that shirt he's wearing.
It's the lighting
the
for me.
80s was so great.
The lighting.
Look at this. Okay, so it's hairstyle, shirt, lighting.
Pose.
It's just so good. Susudio, ladies and gentlemen. That's what that means. You want to guess what it means?
Actually, I've seen him lately.
Yeah, shame he's not doing well.
No.
He's got like what, Parkinson's or something?
I can't remember.
Or he's Alzheimer's or he's got like some deterioration. Poor guy. He looks like a mentally stable Sam Smith.
Yes, he does actually. He looks like he could, yeah, if Sam Smith. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, that's nice. What else have we got? Oh, there's Paul McCartney, the old gran. Yeah, but you see, he's got a bit of a beard going on there.
That
Listen,
could be your gran.
I'll tell you what, he doesn't look so bad, hey? There he looks like a gran.
Hello, darling. Would
Come
you
here
like
and
a sweetie?
Give me a big kiss.
Give me a big kiss. Hello, bad darling.
Oh, my.
You look very, very handsome today. Would you like to give Granny a kiss?
Oh, Leanne, she's not a small woman, you know.
Oh, you know, when you get to my age, then you start to lose testosterone and you start looking like a gran.
That's what he looks like. I don't know. I mean, part of me says, like, I hope one day. How old is Paul McCartney? He must be 84, 85.
I don't know these things anymore.
How old is he? 82, okay. He doesn't look too bad. He looks like a gran, but he doesn't look too bad.
Mm.
I mean, I'd rather look like him than some people.
Yeah.
But you remember the Beatles had that song that my parents used to laugh at. They'd be like, ha, 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 that'll be when we're very old. It's called When I'm 64. Because when I get older, losing my hair many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine, birthday greeting, bottle of wine? Anyway, it's all about getting old. 64, Paul McCartney, that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so part of me, like, I'd rather be Paul McCartney, but then there's also the fact that he looks like a gran.
100%.
Yeah. Okay, so that's those things. Then we've also got these things. Apparently there's a spooky shopping mall in South Africa where the shops are empty.
Yeah.
And it's been like that for a long time because apparently there's this shopping mall in Pretoria. Look at it. Look, look.
Ooh. Is it not being taken over by people? Is it not being lived in?
No. Look, no one's gone there for ages. So apparently what's happened is there's been a decade of litigation and funding challenges. faced by the Nova Property Group.
Ooh, do you know how much money you took lose in a situation like that?
Yeah, after the collapse of ShareMax, they took over. Despite plans to restart, the villa remains an abandoned ghost mall, requiring over $1 billion to complete it, while Chuan's China shopping mall struggles with high vacancies, vandalism, and electricity disputes. Nova's last update in December 2023 indicated continued efforts to secure investment and resolve legal issues, but no significant progress has been made. And those are pretty scary pictures. And I don't know how many of them are actually in the mall, but a lot of them are just from the outside, and it just looks like it's been mothballed completely. Mm. That's so bad, right? Look at that.
I just feel sorry for it. I hope it's not affected a number of families who were invested, you know, the corporates who have invested in that, because
yeah,
there's no coming out of that. You've got to put so much more in.
You can't get out of
that situation.
That's what we were talking about earlier. Sunken cost. So I don't know. They should probably just shut it down. And then for those people who are into Bitcoin, and Cyril would call that a smart mall, says Steve. Yeah. Look, we've got a smart mall. It's what I announced in my budget, in my State of the Nation address.
We've been having it.
Oh. Yeah, lovely. So apparently hackers have stolen $1.5 billion in what may be the largest cryptocurrency theft ever.
Sure.
Breaching the Dubai-based Bybit exchange's Ethereum wallet during a routine transfer.
So not one person.
No. Despite the loss, Bybit assured users that all funds are backed and withdrawals remain unaffected. The incident raises concerns over crypto security, with foreign investigators working to trace the stolen assets. Sounds just like this is no different to people breaking into a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, the breach adds $2.2 billion stolen 303 crypto hacks in 2024, highlighting vulnerabilities in an industry largely unregulated compared to traditional banking. You just got to watch this stuff.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I was thinking the other day how I don't carry a purse around anymore.
Yeah. Just your phone, right?
Yeah, just my phone. But you're still so vulnerable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you open it up, you hover it over the machine.
Yep.
Anybody could see that you've got internet banking at that stage and it cost you on the way out. Again, that's just thinking the whole time of protecting yourself.
You do. You have to. And then just to prove this, there was a guy who suspected his wife was trying to poison him, swapped his meals with his son, and set up cameras to prove it.
But that means that he knew his son was being poisoned.
Yeah, but she was doing it slowly, so he could have stopped it. But apparently an Australian court heard how a guy called Robert Knapinski, I know it sounds a little bit like Ben's surname, right?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. He's 64. Eerily
similar.
He set up a trap to test his wife, Bozina. Her name is Bozina. So Bozina is 63. She was trying to kill him. After suspecting she was trying to poison him, he hid cameras, capturing her adding dangerously high levels of selenium to his drinking water. He reported her to the police in April 2023 after storing 13 bottles as evidence. Now Bozina, the evil Bozina. I just love that. It's not a real name, right?
It's a clown
name. Bozina has pleaded not guilty to 6 counts of intent to harm. She claims she was trying to improve his health. Prosecutors argue their marriage had become toxic, well, in more ways than one.
Yeah.
While her defense insists Robert was a hypochondriac. Ah, he's just a hypochondriac. Here are the bottles of, like, selenium water.
Oh, word.
But he's a hypochondriac.
What is selenium? Is it?
Selenium is a chemical element that comes just under sulfur. So it's in the oxygen group of elements.
Could it be mistaken chelkogens for something that's good for you?
You need a bit of selenium. And the moon goddess was called Selene.
Mm.
So there's an ancient link to selenium being related to the moon. But actually, selenium is hugely important for us to be able to see things. So you need a certain amount of selenium. It gives you...
Oh, he saw things, all right.
It gives you measurement on light. It gives you an ability to see things in dim light. And you need a bit of selenium as a trace element. But it's not massively important in your body. I mean, it's a tiny, tiny percentage of a percentage of your total
makeup. So she wasn't just trying... She wasn't... Yeah, that's a lie.
Yeah, I think too much of anything can be toxic, but selenium's a funny choice. She must have done a little bit of research there. So it wasn't
She's by not such a bozo.
No, Bozina, though. That's her name. I wouldn't marry anyone called Bozina if I were you. No, like, just some general advice going forward. You know, if James brings home Bozina and she's like, I can't wait to be Bozina Ilsley, then we will know to, yeah, that's not a good, that's not where you want to be, Bozina. No. In fact, wasn't that shopping center in Pretoria that's been, that was called the Bozina Mall, right? everything's linked. It's unbelievable. Hey, James, do you want to come and give us some sport? Yeah, because we haven't done that, and people are going to go, oh, no, we've missed out on James's sport. Oh, now I've got to give it. By the way, James and I, again, just proving that this office, because we often will wear black on the same day or whatever in the office, but today James and I are wearing exactly the same gray jeans and gray T-shirts. Oh, he's wearing a collared shirt.
Next, your periods are going to start sinking.
Well, that sofa that you're sitting on used to be orange. But look, it's also gone gray.
It's true.
It's not a good thing, I'm telling you. So we'll get to that in a moment. There's something else you wanted to tell us about, which is, and I think this is quite important for people, is AI getting cleverer or not? So scientists have been testing AI for cognitive decline, and we have some results that may shock you. Dun, dun, dun.
So it's been not even 2 years, right, since ChatGPT became publicly available. And you would think, because it's a learning platform, that it learns from you, it learns from input, it learns from other
it should get better.
GPT platforms, it should get better. So scientists have put a number of GPTs, or as they're called, LLMs, or large language models, through a cognitive impairment or improvement test.
Okay.
That a human would go through, but they've adapted it so that a computer can do it. So they looked at versions 4 and 4.0 of ChatGPT, two versions of Alphabet's Gemini, and version 3.5 of Anthropic's Claude.
Okay.
Cognitive decline, a level of cognitive decline was found in all of them. And so far gone, in fact, that it's comparable to neurodegenerative processes in the human brain.
This is crazy information.
It's becoming dumber.
No, but it's becoming dumber because it's interacting with us.
Do you think so?
Yeah. So again,
draw me a monkey. And it was going to get these amazing
Because
questions.
A large language model should be improving if the people are using language that is improving. But our language is getting dumber. And the way people talk with acronyms and emojis and all of that stuff is bound to have negative consequences on the large language model. So if you and I were talking,
so in other words,
if we wrote each other articles using as many words as we could, but better words, and explaining ourselves in great detail and actually making things more useful, expanding the language to be a little more complex as well. That's not what's happening. People are I need picture of foot. And by the way, we've launched in the office our own, what is it?
Only Feet.
Only Feet.
Mm. Oh, no.
Oh, yes. So Michaela in the office has decided this is a way for us to make money
words,
as an office.
Feet and office together.
It's disgusting, right? I'm appalled, but we're going to talk to her about it on Friday.
Friday, yeah.
Okay. All right. So here's James, dressed in the same colors as me this morning.
Hello.
Go ahead, James. What do you got for us in sport?
Quite a bit.
As if anyone cares, but we'll try.
I want to tell you guys that, did you know?
Yeah.
South Africa plays baseball.
Sorry, I can't see you blending into the sofa too much.
Too much blue?
No, just gray.
Blue Monday.
Looks like you're a floating head.
Lex is fixing it, I think.
No, it's not.
No,
it's not a real problem. I'm joking. I'm an idiot. All right, carry on.
Margaret.
What have we got? Okay, give us some sport.
South Africa plays baseball, guys.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Do we play baseball?
Apparently we do.
Are we good at it?
No, we're world number 31.
Oh, we're not good at it.
Well, that's not too bad.
We're higher ranked than Bafana Bafana in football.
Yeah, but so many countries don't even play baseball.
Nicaragua does.
What?
That place.
Nicaragua. Yeah.
That one.
Nicaragua. Yeah. What did you call it?
Yeah. They played and we lost to them.
We lost
to them. Yeah, we did. Okay. We did. That was the first game we played.
About 10 people in Nicaragua. Yeah, okay.
Exactly. First game we played at the World Baseball Classic.
All right.
Qualifiers. We lost to them in our first game.
That's great. We won to anyone?
No, that was our first game.
Number 32.
So far. Yeah.
No, Leanne, we don't know who that is. I want actual evidence, please.
That's rankings the world of baseball. That's all I've got for you. In the English Premier League, there was football this weekend. Arsenal bottled the league. Liverpool are officially winning the Premier League.
You like
a lot
that.
Of people have a lot to say about that, and they're not winning the league. But I can tell you they are. I'm living my best life.
Okay.
Someone who's not are the people at Accrington Stanley. They lost this weekend to Doncaster 2-1. But back in the Premier League, Chelsea, they lost to Aston Villa 2-1. Also, Newcastle, they beat Forest 4-3. And then Liverpool, they beat Man City 2-0. So, you know.
Amazing. You're having a good time here. Sorry for Accrington Stanley. I really I didn't even know they were a club up to 3-4 weeks ago. But now we're involved.
We should do Accrington Stanley Cups as merch.
No one will buy them.
Stanley Cup.
Michaela would.
No. Listen, I've got to say the funniest thing I saw on the internet this weekend, and I forgot to send you a clip of it. It's a dude with one of those big wheelie bins that the municipality can, but he's got a straw in it, and he says, this is what Stanley, because the Stanley Cup is this
so
big, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge thing. And he's like wheeling it down the street with the straw, and he's like, oh, yeah, and I'm so thirsty from this huge big thing. And that's what Stanley Cups look like. Yeah, I don't know why everybody's so into them. Here in the office, we've got Michaela, Chantel.
Very good at keeping things cold.
Simpiwe has one.
Yeah. Chantel has the Tyler version.
She has two of them, yeah. And they're this big. They block the sun when they're on her desk. Right?
I hear you.
So that's the world of football. Champions Trophy that this weekend also happened. There was the World Cricket Proteas. They beat Afghanistan by 107 runs.
Yeah, I saw some cricket. I saw Pakistan and India.
Pakistan, they did lose to India this weekend. Australia, they beat England by 5 wickets in that high-scoring game there. And then the world of rugby, there was international rugby this weekend. The Six Nations, Wales, they played Ireland. Ireland won 27-18. England, they beat Scotland 16-15. And then France beat Italy 73-24, which is by a lot. France now just 3 points back on the log with a big match between France and Ireland next week to decide the trophy. And then in the URC, the Bulls, they played the Lions. They won 31-19. And that is the sport.
Thank you very much, James. Very important.
Thank you.
All right. While you bring our guest in to sit where you've just been sitting, I want Leanne to tell us about something that is really helpful. This is something that I think many of us can benefit from. We're always talking about which jobs are going to go the way of the dodo, right? What AI is going to replace people.
Mm-hmm.
It's depressing stuff. But we've got a list, thanks to Leanne, from Forbes magazine, apparently, of traditional degrees that are becoming obsolete. But here are the skills, and you will get them here on this show. Here are the skills that you need to actually make it in today's job market. Okay, so they've done the survey for us. Let's go.
They're saying it's not necessarily important to have a degree or a diploma.
Good. I've been saying that for a long time.
But they are saying it's because tertiary education hasn't evolved enough.
Yes.
In order to accommodate what's coming next.
Right.
So it's all about your skills. So it's all about deciding as a young person, or hopefully with the guidance of your parents, how to fit, what courses to go on, what skills to learn, what to practice.
Okay.
Because these things are not necessarily taught in tertiary education anymore.
Okay. But like what?
Okay. So digital and tech skills. So you would use online courses like Coursera, Udacity, Google AI.
Okay, so this is in order to use AI more effectively.
Yes, and
because
also,
it doesn't help having all this technology if you don't know how to prompt the right answers out of it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's teaching you how to use AI within certain fields, like in the medical field.
Right.
There's a specific way of using
design
it.
Or whatever it might be.
Yeah. In finance,
so
in whatever it is.
You need to know which aspect of AI you're dealing with and how to get the best results.
Absolutely. Okay. Cybersecurity, something huge. We were just talking about that hacking.
Yeah, exactly.
Massive. And there are ways that you can learn ethical hacking techniques in order to educate yourself. Data analysis and data science, not necessarily a big thing at the moment. You've got to learn platforms like SQL, Python, and R, DataCamp, Kaggle.
Yeah, but this is coding, and it'll help you if you don't know how to interpret the information that large language models are spitting out at you, then they might as well be it might as well be gibberish. You know, it's like people who still don't know, like me, how to read an Excel spreadsheet. I don't. So it's no use.
No, exactly.
All this brilliant technology, and I'm still like a caveman with it. All right.
Then what within else? Project management, there are big gaps in tertiary education. So things like sales and negotiation, you would be able to, in fact, it's even got a list of books that you can read. So even books are better than going and getting a tertiary education.
Right.
Communication and collaboration skills, EQ, emotional intelligence, not something that's taught about. Public speaking is still big up there in presentation. And yeah, that's it. So very niched, but they serve a bigger picture. Once you know how to use AI within the medical industry, you're going to be set up for a whole lot of jobs. And that's not something you can learn at varsity.
Yeah, I asked AI the other day, what are the areas that will become the most important in the economy of the next 10 years? And it kind of came up with a lot of those. It also came up with things that we'll always need humans for, like looking after other people.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, people who actually are able to nurse, for example, or to look after old people or kids or whatever. Those are not going to go away anytime soon. There's no machine that's going to come in and do that better. And I think that leads us on to what we're going to talk to Terry about this morning. Terry Parfitt is the CEO of the Smile Foundation. I'm proud to say I got involved with these guys years ago.
Yeah, that's
when
right.
they just started. And I think a huge amount of credit here to Mark Lubner, who we'll talk about in just a moment or two. But Terry's the CEO of the Smile Foundation, which, of course, is an amazing organization. They transform the lives of children who are affected by facial abnormalities and severe burns through the best possible surgical and psychological care. And I also thought, you know, if you're feeling a little bit sorry for yourself this morning because, oh, it's Monday and I don't feel like going to work, there are children who are dealing with a harder set of circumstances than you are. And so many of them come out of the other side of this, the most positive, incredible, and motivational stories. And I thought it would be a good idea to talk about initiatives that really are about celebrating 25 years of making a difference. That is an unbelievable amount of time. Terry, it's so nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you.
25 years, hey?
Yeah. It's an incredible achievement for any business or company, but for a nonprofit especially, when we rely on donations from the public and from corporates.
And I know this is not a numbers game, but how many kids have you helped along the way?
Yeah, over the last 25 years, we've helped over 5,000 children with surgeries. And that has an exponential effect because it's not just the children's surgeries, it's the families and in the community. So it's in the hundreds of thousands probably.
That's phenomenal. Okay, so when it started, just give us the origin story here. It's like a superhero. Frankly, I think the Smile Foundation is a superhero. Give us the origin story of the Smile Foundation.
So it began with a tenacious young mother. She had a daughter that had total facial paralysis. So this child couldn't smile, couldn't blink. There was absolutely no expression. And so she
was born with that condition?
Yeah, it's called Moebius syndrome.
Wow.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
And she wrote many letters to Nelson Mandela. You know, at the time, it's in handwritten letters. And because she was from the Eastern Cape, one of the letters went into his private mail and he opened it because he was from the Eastern Cape.
Mm.
And he was so taken aback by the story that he happened to phone Mark Lubner at the time and said, we've got to do something to help this child. And there were no surgeons in this country that could work on this kind of problem. And so they went overseas and they found surgeons there. And they came back with these skills and they helped this little girl. Her name is Tando. Mm-hmm. And 25 years later, she sits at the front of house at Africa Tikkun, which is our sister organization.
Wow.
And she smiles at everyone that comes through the door.
No, that's amazing.
And she couldn't move her face as a kid.
No, nothing. Sure. I mean, it's a very complex surgery. They have to take nerves from the inner thigh.
Wow.
They have to place it in the cheek area. And it takes between 12 and 14 hours. But at the time, there was no one in the country that could do that surgery. Mm. And now they are. And we've trained... at the moment, we have a network of about 50 surgeons that work with Smile Foundation across the country. So it's not only helping children, it's also expanding the field, the medical field.
I love it. And obviously, when people think about how important the face is, it's the way that, you know, people remember you. It's the single greatest physical memorable asset that we all have. And
yeah. It
can be an asset, but for some people, they're born with some sort of abnormality, some sort of facial deformity, and that just puts you on the back foot straight away. So if you're a kid, you don't deserve to start life that way.
No, and right? Other kids are cruel.
They are horrible.
They are really cruel. And so to be able to circumvent that early on, I mean, there's this window of time where we want to do the surgeries. It's about 6 to 12 months old, where right. They're starting to develop and you don't want them to start speaking differently. You know, some get a cleft palate, mm-hmm. which is a hole
right.
in the back of their throat and milk escapes through their nose. So that's like a feeding problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then there's speech problems and it manifests into something bigger. And so we want to try and help these kids before they go to school, before they have growth problems. And then they have a chance just like you and I. It's just amazing. You would never even know that they were born like that.
How many people are dealing with this? How many kids are born with like cleft palates or whatever it might be?
The stats are quite sketchy.
You can't save everybody. You guys are trying, and my God, your numbers are amazing, and the lives you've changed are, you know, each of them is a story on its own. But they're probably many others.
Yeah, I mean, they're also looking into the causes of it. So one of it is genetic.
Yeah.
And there's
the hair lip, they used to call it, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. And I actually went and delved into the genetics of it a little bit. And there's this gene called MTHFR. I don't know if you know, it's a gene mutation.
No.
And lots of us have it. Like if you go do the 23andMe or the analysis here, it's about 60 to 70% of people have it.
Wow. And then it sometimes just manifests with this.
Yeah, so that's your body's ability to methylate folic acid.
Huh.
So if you can't do that, then you start to develop other problems. You know, it may not be cleft lip, but maybe cancer or something down the line.
Right.
But it is linked to your ability because, you know, a pregnant woman always take folic acid.
Yeah.
And if you can't methylate the folic acid, then it's not absorbed. Yes. So this is a genetic mutation that's happened. But then there's also obviously nutrition problems and then inbreeding. So it's not so much in South Africa, but there's a place in Guatemala where it's triple the rate of cleft lip and palate because of the inbreeding.
Ooh.
That's amazing. I suppose now with, you know, the improvements in medical science and the ability for us to figure out that something might be wrong long before a child's even born, of course you have to have access to that medical care, which in South Africa is a big part of the problem. But it does help that we're advancing in ways like this. So now, most interesting thing about the Smile Foundation, well, there are lots of cool things about it, but you mentioned this already. You don't get to generate your own money. You don't get money from any one person. You have to keep going, and NGOs are very hard to run. So being the CEO, a lot of what you do on a day-to-day basis is just managing the money, hoping to bring in the donations. Do lots of events and things. You go around and tell people the story of what you guys are up to. And hopefully generous people all over the country and the world will help you along. How's that going?
Well, it's tough. I mean, it's a tough
Very
environment.
Tough. Yeah.
There's over 280,000 NGOs in this country or NPOs.
Wow.
So you really have to differentiate yourself. It does help that I'm an actuary. So I've got a financial background. So I'm minding those rands and cents.
I'm sure.
And, you know, before I embarked on this world, I was very circumspect as to what goes on in this NPO space and, you know, how much of it actually goes towards surgeries. And I'm because now I'm at the helm, I'm making sure that as much as we can, it goes directly to the surgeries. And there's very, very little waste. We're looking to make everything more efficient, help as many kids as we can. So last year we helped 500 kids, and that's up. That was up 30% from the previous year. So it's a lot of surgeries.
How did you? What's your story? How did you get involved with the Smile Foundation? What did you do before that?
So before that, I worked at Alexander Forbes, which most actuaries do, and I started my own investment business with four other actuaries, which was called Colorfield. It's still going.
Yes.
And it was fantastic. We were helping. Your eyes can glaze over when I tell you.
No, I want to hear.
Liability-driven investing, where we looked out for pensioners. So we invested, we invested inflation-linked bonds for pensioners. And it actually is a fantastic business, and it's still going so well. But at some point, I just felt like I wanted to do something for South Africa, actually. Like, I didn't want to make money for money's sake. And living in South Africa, you know, we sometimes live in this little bubble. And I was tired of that, and I wanted to do something and not be part of the problem. I wanted to be part of the solution.
Wow.
So on a good day, when I worked at Colorfield, I made more money, and now I help more children.
Yeah, I suppose you also you just swap priorities, and it must be extremely gratifying to know that you are really in a practical and lifelong way helping people. It's just the impact is so enormous. But it must be kind of stressful too, because you know to keep this thing going and to keep changing lives and, as you said, break records with how many kids you can help in a year, that's tough as nails. Are South Africans aware of the Smile Foundation to the degree that, because I mean, I think it's a pretty well-known brand.
I've never not known what it was in all of its years of existence.
But do people give money? I mean, is it harder than ever to ask people?
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, we've got a very good reputation. You know, you say the Smile Foundation and inevitably people smile. You know, they know it does good things. But the average South African is stretched. You know, so it's difficult. You know, they want to help, but it's hard. So we get a lot of them. We got a lot of corporate sponsors, Vodacom, Adcock Ingram. These are really great sponsors, and they have been for many, many years. But you mentioned our 25th anniversary. And so what we want to do is we want to go into the schools. So, you know, these children are bombarded with social media, and they see these perfect images.
Sure.
You know, they see Taylor Swift, and they see whatever, the Ferrari experience in Dubai, and, you know, everything seems so perfect. And then real life is not so perfect, and they feel anxious. These kids don't know what to do when they are faced with imperfection. And so we want to go to the schools. We're rolling this out, this World Smile Day, which is on the 19th of September, to raise awareness for what we do. And we want to show the kids what looking different looks like, and that it's acceptable. And I think with kids, you know, when you show them a problem, like I've seen now with these hostages and how scary it is you know, for them. And there's no real solution. You know, they just feel scared. Whereas what we're going to do is we're going to show them that there's these kids that look different, and this is what you can do to help. You know, so I want you to be part of this initiative, which is go buy stickers. It's kind of like Slipper Day, where you go buy stickers to support World Smile Day.
And you just put them on an ugly guy like me. And I mean, this is potentially the only time that this face might be useful. So I'm happy to help in any way I can.
And then and then you get to wear your funky socks on that day to support us.
Oh, that's fun.
And we're looking to raise, you know, for 25 years, we're wanting to do 100 surgeries, which is about 25,000 rand a surgery, so we raised 2.5 million rand.
Wow.
So it's a big endeavor, but we think...
And tell me, do the doctors also give of their time and expertise for nothing? And, you know, there are lots of people along the way here that are probably pulling their weight as well.
Absolutely.
So that when it comes to the costs that you're keeping an eye on, you can keep those at an absolute minimum. So, I mean, those people are also heroes.
They absolutely are. I mean, the network of doctors that work with us are really incredible. I mean, they work in the aesthetic world. You know, they can go do boobs and bums as much and make lots of money. And they choose to help children from, like, underserved communities.
I encourage them not to stop with the boobs and the bums. I mean, you can.
Well, encourage them to stop with
doctors,
the bums.
Doctors,
sure.
you've got to do more. We're relying on you. The whole world needs you. But it is incredible that there are so many kind, giving people. You know, sometimes you think, ugh, humanity, because who knows? You watch the news for long enough, and there's enough stuff to make you miserable. But there are such awesome people that are just out there doing what you're doing, for example. And it deserves a tip of the cap. Okay, so the idea here that different, that looking different, because that's helping people psychologically too. And I couldn't agree with you more. Like, these things have made it so damn hard for people to appreciate how lucky they may be, that you are physically healthy, that you live in a home where your parents love you, where you have food in your stomach, little things, because many South Africans don't have any of those things. And people are pressurized by social media to imagine that they're all hideously ugly, and that the world is going to be a horrible place for them, because you've got all these supposedly perfect people who are posting stuff the whole time. And it's not really like that. I'm so glad I grew up when I did, because I don't know if, you know, half these kids, especially girls, because it's hard if you're a girl. That's the stuff when, you know, when you were at school and I was at school, Leanne, it would stay at school. You'd still go home and have a normal life.
Be safe.
Now this follows you home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real problem, and it's very scary. These kids are very anxious. They don't know how to see those images and then look at themselves and their lives and marry the two. It's very confusing, and I agree with you. Like, living in the era we did, it was much simpler. But you see these kids in the hospital, and some of them are really deformed, especially from burns. You know, burns is like, it's very sad to see what happens. And they are so happy. They are so full of joy. It's unbelievable. And you just think, like, you have no idea, like, what the world is how it's going to treat you. And just for this little microcosm of time, they are just pure joy. It's just amazing.
Yeah, there's something really, really special about helping kids as opposed to adults. I mean, everybody needs help, right? And there's lots of good causes in this country. But it is, it's just extremely gratifying when you can see a happy smile on it. And this is why the Smile Foundation, from a brand point of view, is such a winner. Yeah. Because who doesn't love a smile?
Mm-hmm. Have you been in positions before where you've had to make a decision on who you can help and who you can't?
Yeah, I mean, we've recently had a case with from a girl from Lesotho who's just so extremely deformed. I mean, she's got a cleft lip. She's got a facial cleft, which is like basically a hole all the way through to her brain. And she's deaf and blind, and her mother is trying everything that she can. And she's 6 years old to try and get the surgery. And the doctors mainly make that decision. It's not really us. And they were like, it's, you know, she may not make it, you know, if they do this very, very complicated surgery. And the mother keeps raising money and she keeps trying, and the doctors are pushing back because they're saying that, you know, they don't want to do the surgery if it ends, you know, if it ends badly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very difficult.
Tough. Yeah.
By the way, Hugh, who's a miserable son of a bitch in the comments, says, why must we help everyone? No one's asking you, Hugh. If you don't want to, you don't have to. All right. But you just heard the story now. And I'm pretty sure if you have a heart, then you want to help where you can, Hugh. All right? Sure. It's always him.
Some people, you know.
Miserable.
You know, it's interesting that the government is looking at this NHI story. Mm. And we did this initiative in East London in Frere Hospital where you know, I got up and I thanked everyone. And so I thanked the hospital because the hospital doesn't have a plastic surgery department. So we brought in doctors from the private sector that were working pro bono. So I thanked the hospital for allowing us in. And the hospital turned around and said, thank you. Thank you for bringing these surgeons and for teaching our nurses and our registrars. Mm. And they were so grateful. And then I said to the doctors, thank you so much for coming and helping these kids. I mean, they did unbelievable surgeries. They were working on kids' hands that had been burnt. And the scar tissue had closed them, so they had no more access to their hands. And these two doctors were working on either side of this child at the same time on both hands. And they just made such a big difference. So I thank these doctors, and these doctors turned around and said, you know, we could never have done this without Smile Foundation. Like, you guys brought the kids and organized this whole thing, and never in our wildest dreams would we think that we could do this on our own. And we're so grateful for the opportunity. And then I thanked our donors, Vodacom, because obviously we need, I mean, it's a very expensive thing, and they brought the money and they thanked us. They said, you know, we really want to do good things, and it's because of you guys that we can. And it was just this amazing combination of like private and public and working together and fixing some kind of gap.
That's so lovely.
And it works. It works without, you know, the government having to cause havoc. And
well, you know, actually, you want to keep them out of it. Otherwise, it will be a disaster.
Yeah.
I can say that. You don't have to.
Yeah.
But that is, it's all these people who are, and I've seen this happen with organizations, and they're very few like yours, but organizations like yours, where people are, they're trying to do something more than for themselves, right? So it's kind of when you get to a point where it's not just about your needs. Yeah. Like you were talking about your business earlier, how you decided to do this instead. And once you're in a place where everybody's thanking everybody and they're all like thrilled to be a part of something.
Yeah.
And the real benefit is for this kid, you know, can you imagine not being able to open your hands, for God's sake? But they're all there. And yes, it's hard work and it's hours and it's time and it's money and it's effort and it's expertise and all of these things. But man, it's so worthwhile.
You're changing someone's life. They would not have forever. The same life.
Forever. It's incredible. No, so I'm pleased to have you here, Tari. And thank you so much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thank you. And Gareth, I'd just also like to thank you for your support of the Smile Foundation over the last, I don't know if it's 25 years, but it's a very long time.
I'm very inconsistent. Hey? if you relied on me, there'd be like two kids and the one would still have a hair lip. So, I mean, I'm happy to help where I can, but
we're very grateful.
By the way, I mean, I don't want you to heal and cure everybody, because I used to do this thing called the Speech Impediment Olympics. Remember, Leanne?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, and we still need a couple of people with cleft palates. Otherwise, how are we going to get them to read those poems on the show? It is tremendous. I mean, I can make fun because I actually do give a damn. But if you can get involved, there are lots of good causes in South Africa. And don't worry about people like Hugh, who obviously don't want to help anybody. But if you do, then it's worth looking into what the Smile Foundation does. I mean, 25 years is an incredible and impressive track record.
Yeah.
There are people who are in jobs all over South Africa today that probably would never have got those jobs, would never have had the life that they have if it wasn't for the Smile Foundation. So, Tari and your whole team, congrats to you guys. It's just incredible what you do. And keep making South Africa smile.
Thank you.
I don't think there's a better cause than that.
Mm-hmm.
Have an awesome day, everybody. We will be back on Wednesday at 6 a.m., bright and early. Smile all day for this Monday. Ciao.